Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to DTNS Experiment Week. All this week, DTNS is on summer vacation, but in its place is Experiment Week, where our producers and contributors are trying out new show ideas and releasing them right here on the DTNS feed. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to Boba Tech, a podcast focusing on the Asian American perspective on tech and new media. We will explore topics such as Asian representation on social media, streaming services, and more. Hello, my name is Nicole Lee, and I've been a journalist in the tech industry for over 17 years at this point. I've worked for outlets such as Engadget, CNET, Wired Magazine, and more. I also consider myself an Asian American. I am of Chinese descent. I was born and raised in Malaysia, but I moved to the US when I was 18, and I've been here ever since. You know, I'm in my 40s now, so that means I've spent my entire adult life in the US, and I consider myself very much an American and very much Asian as well. I'm hoping that this podcast will be an interesting journey into the world of tech and media from an Asian American perspective. I think now is a very exciting time for this kind of perspective, especially as there's more Asian representation on the big screen with movies like Shang-Chi and new media such as a lot of K-dramas and Squid Game on Netflix. So I think this is an interesting time to bring this unique perspective. And I hope you will join me in exploring this topic together with me as well as any guests that I invite to the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Before we get to our guest today, I would like to start off with some news. Perhaps the biggest news this week is Warner Brothers Discovery deciding to cancel Batgirl, even though it was near completion. It won't be in theaters and it won't be on HBO Max either. This is despite the fact that the company had already spent $90 million into the project. This is a shame for many reasons, one of which is that Leslie Grace was supposed to be one of the young new faces of the DC Cinematic Universe. And Leslie Grace is of Dominican descent, and that was, you know, a big deal for the Dominican community. Brandon Fraser was supposed to make his big cinematic comeback as the big villain in this movie. And the other big shame, especially from an Asian perspective, is that Ivory Aquino was supposed to play Alicia Yeo. And Alicia Yeo is Barbara Gordon's best friend. And this was supposed to be the very first representation of a transgender Asian American female character on a big screen like this, especially for DC. And it's just a shame all around that we won't get this important characters to be on screen. And it's a shame all around. In slightly more positive news, Google is making it easier for people to find and support Asian-owned businesses in their communities. Starting this week, US merchants can add an Asian-owned label to a verified Google business profile, which will appear in search and maps queries. This move is part of Google's efforts to support historically marginalized communities. It's done this before with Black-owned, Latino-owned, veteran-owned, women-owned, and LGBTQ+-owned businesses. So it's been doing this now for Asian-owned businesses as well. It's worked with the Grow with Google initiative, as well as the nonprofit U.S. Pan-Asian American Chamber of Commerce to help, you know, these Asian-owned small businesses to get visibility on Google. And this is especially important, of course, due to the rise of Asian hate crimes in the past few years and the slowing down of business in places like Chinatown and Koreatown, things like that. So I think this is an important step in the right direction. Before we get into the interview, I just want to apologize in advance for the quality of the recording. It was through Skype. I think there was something on my end that produced a little bit of noise, so apologies in advance for the subpar quality of my particular microphone, especially. Now on to the show.
I'm so glad to introduce my very first guest, Eileen Rivera. Hello.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me here.
Hi. so glad to speak to you. You know, we actually have been podcasting before years and years ago on an Android podcast for Twit, as well as Geeks on Glee, I believe.
Oh my gosh.
Many
Our
years ago.
Life. Oh my gosh.
Many wow. years ago, both Eileen and I used to do a podcast about Glee, back in the heyday of Glee, I should say, bad version of Glee.
Like the true Hollywood story version.
The true Hollywood story version of Glee. Yes, in the heyday. But yeah, so glad to talk to you, Eileen.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I feel like, you know, I feel honored to be your first guest, if this becomes your first episode.
Yes, we'll see. I'll say, you know, Eileen, I guess you can speak a little bit about your background. And, you know, you're of course, Filipino. You know, I'm Chinese. You know, we can talk a little bit about what we bring to our perspectives in all of this.
Yeah, I'm a Filipino-American. I've was born and raised in California. I was born in Los Angeles, lived half my life in Southern California and half my life in Northern California, moved up to the Bay Area to go to college, and I majored in communications, broadcast communications, and that's what I do for a living. I work in media. I've worked in media for a very long time as a producer, I've been very fortunate to have sort of, you know, followed tech and media and entertainment, you know, all my life, you know, again, been very fortunate because I really love what I do. So, and it's an amazing landscape, entertainment and media, and, you know, and I'm excited to talk about representation because so much has changed. You know, I wish, honestly, Nicole, I wish I was in my 20s right now because I feel like there's so much representation. I mean, growing up, I mean, please. I had no offense, but Connie Chung was the only thing on TV
absolutely.
That was Asian, right?
Yes.
And then,
absolutely.
You know, slowly, but I mean, I was latching onto J-Lo early on, but she's not Asian. She's Latina.
No, she isn't.
I was just latching onto something brown, you know? So, you know, anything different than, you know, what was blanketed on television and movies, I was, you know, extremely curious about. And, you know, didn't always fit, right? You always felt like you didn't fit. And that was tough whenever you were watching any kind of representation on TV. So I feel like, I know I'm going to sound old, but young people today, young Asian Americans, Asians in general, let's just put everybody, people of color, there's a lot more representation of many groups And a lot more understanding and open-mindedness. Yes. And I just feel like a lot of that, honestly, I was talking to my husband about this the other day, but it's because of technology and being open. Yes. And we're listening to things in a global perspective finally. And that's due to technology.
I totally agree with that.
As a kid, I was like wanting to do, you know, letters to pen pals. Like you don't even, you just have your phone now and like text on what, pick WhatsApp, line, whatever it may be. You can speak to someone globally at any minute, you know? Yeah. And it's amazing. And that access is really what is tipping the scales right now and what is making everything that used to be so foreign and, you know, acceptable.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. I think that was an interview, I think, a while back when Crazy Rich Asians first came out 7 years ago.
Oh my God,
and
I cried watching that movie. I was so happy.
And they were asking, why did it take so long for this kind of representation to come out? And I think somebody said, I can't remember exactly who, but it's because of social media.
Yeah.
It's because of social media and technology, the fact that, you know, Instagram and TikTok and all of these apps have made it so that it's okay. It's normal. Mm-hmm. It's like a completely different kind of world now than it was 20 to 30 years ago because, you know, the internet has made things just easier.
It's just easier, the access. I mean, I feel like I would have been into K-pop a long time ago if I had more access to it. You know,
right.
I would have been into a lot of other, you know, I mean, growing up as an Asian American, I was sheltered into how much I knew about even my own culture. You know, I mean, I knew what I knew from my family. But in terms of Asia in general, and there was only so much that we learned in schools. Right? You learn American history. and now we're learning. We didn't really learn all the right history.
Right. Well, so, I mean, for me, you know, I grew up in Asia. I grew up in Malaysia. And I was exposed to a lot of Asian media, like, you know, Hong Kong media, those kinds of things. But I always thought that's Asian media. You know, that's American media. It's a different thing. Mm-hmm. American media is like, you know, I don't know, Clint Eastwood, Brad Pitt or something. And there's not as much Asian representation in America. And just in my mind, that was like very separate things. But then, you know, there was some sort of infiltration, you could say. Like there was some interplay with like Jackie Chan and stuff like that. But even that was very one note.
Yep.
And he was a very specific kind of actor, a very specific kind of character in those kinds of movies, martial arts and things like that. And like I said, Crazy Rich Asians kind of opened the door a lot, just showing that Asians can be more than just martial arts people. They can be more than just, you know, you know, a comedic, rep, you know, a comic, like sidekick or something like that.
Yeah, because the stories were very relatable. You just had Asian actors in it, and it was great.
Right.
It was well, and I mean, you had, you know, foods and certain customs, and they did travel to Singapore. But, you know, but the overall themes of that movie were very relatable. And, you know, obviously prior to that, you wouldn't see that kind of movie made, period. You know, I feel like I can talk in generalities because it's still, you know, even though now I feel like there's more representation in media, it's still, the percentage is still a bit off, right? So
absolutely.
You know, I was just talking, now this is not Asian representation and I'm not of this culture, but I had just read that James Franco was cast as Fidel Castro. And it's like, wait, what? And I had to look up his origin. I was like, what is he? Oh, his dad is half Portuguese and he's Swedish Jew. Okay. So I'm a little confused about that casting, to be honest with you. And that's a you know, I'm not going to speak to that community, but I'm confused. And you know, obviously through the years, there have been a lot of casting decisions made that were quite questionable, you know, Scarlett Johansson. And as much as I love her, you know, as much as I love her in general, I'm like, wait, what were you, why were you cast as this, you know, Emma Stone, right? Like, why were you like playing an Asian at all? Like, what is this, you know, down to the voice acting too, right? Because voice actors are getting called out. As well. I can't remember all the different
examples. This is all recent history.
And very recent.
Recent history.
Right.
The past, like, few years or something.
Exactly.
This is not, like, in the 60s or 70s. This is, like, literally in the, like, past
2 years.
Yeah.
Like, 24 hours. Talking about the James Franco thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is not, like, distant past. This is, like, recent history. So we're still obviously getting through it, getting over it. And here's the thing, like, you could argue some people on the internet would say, oh, what does it matter? You know, it's acting, is acting, or it matters.
It matters. It matters in the writer's room. It matters like who's writing these stories. Do you even understand what people are, you know, in those communities are going through? Do you even understand the intricacies of the way foods are made, the way greetings are made to people, just the simple hellos and just the simple jokes? Like you don't get it if you're not, and even, you know, the point of view of an answer, you know, is so different in every community. And if you have the wrong person representing it or writing it behind the scenes, it's it's really not okay, you know?
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So that's definitely the Asian American representation in media, like the Crazy Rich Asians. There's a lot of it on like streaming services too, which is, that's the benefit of streaming services. I want to say is that because there's so many, there's like Netflix and Hulu, and like there's so many streaming services that there's opportunities for more marginalized voices to have their own movies and have their own TV shows, and to sort of that kind of show be available and be viewable to more people. You know, for example, Kim's Convenience. I would never have heard of Kim's Convenience.
Oh, gosh.
She wasn't for Netflix.
You know? Exactly. Me too.
So,
and wait a minute. We have to talk about this. I saw your Instagram where you went to Simu Liu's book signing.
Book signing, yes.
Is he as handsome? Yeah. Like, as I see on TV, he's that.
Mild digression, tangent, but yes.
I have to know, since you breathe the same air as him.
I did meet Simu Liu at a book signing, and I, all of a sudden, I was, like, 14 again. I was just, like, I couldn't, like, I was like, oh my god. he's very cute. He's very, very cute. He's very good looking.
And awesome as Shang-Chi, so, you know.
Yes, Shang-Chi, another one.
Another, like, oh, our first Asian superhero, first. Like, right. In recent years. Oh, my gosh.
In recent years, like, literally last year.
Yeah.
So, there's that. So talking about Asian American representation in media, you know, there's a lot of, like, they've been on YouTube for a while. I should say that's a lot of Asian American on YouTube in general. I think there's, you know, Wong Fu Productions. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, or Wong Fu. And then there's a lot of, like, other, like, sort of Asian American specific YouTube representation. Mm-hmm. But like I said, they weren't really, like, quote-unquote mainstream in the way that Shang-Chi or Crazy Rich Asians are.
Yeah.
The flip side, I think, now, which is really interesting to me, and you should probably be more knowledgeable about this, is the rise of, like, K-dramas and K-pop. Yeah. In the popular mainstream,
yeah.
In the way that I've never seen it before. Like, I've heard of K-pop for years, but not to this level and not to this, like, just people going crazy over them. Like, selling, like, BTS selling out stadiums, you know? Yeah. So, like, it's like, what do you think of that? Like, what do you think contributed to that? And what do you think about, like, this crazy... this like rise of this fandom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the case of BTS, it's very much what you said earlier, which is social media. You know, they came from a very small company that was not getting any attention, and they were getting shut out of, you know, TV shows when they debuted, and, you know, the fans rallied and made phone calls, and, you know, it was grassroots. It really was grassroots. And now they're HYBE. You know, which is one of the biggest companies right now in the world, right? And who bought an American company that, or American, I'm sorry for not remembering right now the name of the label, but bought the American label that represents Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande. They're all part. They're all now part family. Of the same group. They're all part of the same group now, right? Like, that's crazy because BTS debuted in 2013. And, you know, but I also don't want to just say it's social media, because if their music was not that good, no one would care. Well, their music is amazing.
It's a combination of things.
They're very talented, and they were seen. It took a long time, but, you know, combination of the grassroots social media and their amazing talent and the music that is, I'm biased because I love them so much, so good, propelled them. And they have this wonderful message. And, you know, along the way, they're, you know, throwing positivity out the door left and right. And people are eating that up, because there is there are groups of marginalized people who are wanting to just, you know, be haters. They want to, you know, embrace each other. So yeah, I think they're the breakout, because they're just the talent just oozed. It was just so good. You can't deny it. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's also probably some luck involved in piecing together that talent and the fandom. And the fandom just, you know, galvanized and was so passionate, and eventually, you know, was heard. And now they just keep gaining more and more and more fans. And now they're beyond K-pop. They're like,
right.
They're beyond, I can't even call them K-pop anymore. I mean, I think they want to be K-pop, but I think they're beyond that, because they're in an echelon of, you know, dare I say, they're in the conversations with Beyonce and Justin Bieber and, you know, Adele. Like, they're in those conversations. Maybe you don't know them yet, but there's still a lot of, not you, Nicole, but like a listener out there may not know them yet, but they're now like a global phenomenon. On K-dramas. Yeah, I mean, I feel like Parasite, before we talk about K-dramas, you know, Parasite winning the Oscar again, not long ago, pre-pandemic, two years ago, that knocked, you know, everybody away. They just blew everyone away. And then, you know, you have a lot of those actors in K-dramas and whatnot, but then there's Squid Game, right? I feel like because of Squid Game, which, okay, I've been watching K-dramas much longer than I've been, like, an army for BTS.
Sure.
And I'm just like, this is the one that broke out? Oh, well, okay, I get it. Because there's lots of violence and, you know, there's greed involved. And it's a really good story. You know, it really is. But I was just like, really, this one? Okay, because I've been watching so many. There's so many great K-dramas out there that people don't know. But that's just because of my own exposure. And you know, it just started, like, K-dramas just started really becoming big after Squid Game. But I wasn't on, I wasn't watching K-dramas on Netflix for the first 2 years of my, you know, world entry into K-dramas. I was using Viki.com was the best place for me to watch some of the, and still some of the best K-dramas are on there. They're starting to get catalog on Netflix. And I'm like, well, I'm looking, I'm like, oh yeah, I saw that 3 years ago. It's on Netflix now. Okay. That was big back in the day. And there's so many other streaming sites like iQIYI. You know, I miss the boat on Drama Fever when people had that before it shut down. But now, you know,
about it, it's like, is it because it's just so different from American dramas? Is it because it's like,
yes, like different or something? So there is a K-drama that is very popular right now called Extraordinary Attorney Woo.
Attorney Woo, yeah. I know about it.
And are you watching it, by the way?
No, I do know the story in general.
Oh, okay.
The premise of the show, yes.
And the other day I found out, or last week I found out, that they're already thinking about developing it for U.S. audience. And I'm kind of like,
really? Oh.
Okay. So I mean, I guess there could be a different spin. I guess there could be a different cultural spin. But what I love about K-dramas, and you tell me, Nicole, if you can think of a show other than this one that I'm about to name, I don't think Americans have heart. the last show that had a lot of heart that I watched that was huge, that was made from America, which is now over, is This Is Us. That is, I mean, I didn't watch Parenthood. Sorry, I didn't. That wasn't. I tried, and not that I didn't want to. So many seasons to catch up. Okay. But, you know, This Is Us was that show that was very family-oriented, touching. I mean, you're crying almost every episode because of something happening. Not not tragic, but just, you know, poignant, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of K-dramas have that. There's this humanity in K-dramas that's missing in a lot of, you know, crime dramas, medical dramas, and action drama. We just like action and sex. I'm sorry to be so generic about this, but that's what Americans really like, action and sex.
Right.
Whereas that in K-dramas, there's more character development, and maybe it's because they know they're going to, most of these K-dramas, although now with Netflix, I'm seeing season 2 of Squid Game. I'm like, oh my God, they don't do that in Korea most of the time. Usually it's just
one season and then they're done.
16 episode season, and every episode is like a movie, right? They could be like an hour and a half long, but you get the arc. You get the whole shebang. You don't need any more after one season.
Yeah.
But within that, there is not just like, there's crazy dramas where people are yelling, like what we love here in the United States. But then there's always some poignant moment, some humanity in the episode where there's the character development, or there's some sort of familial tie or something that is just much more heartfelt that I don't think we know how to do well, nor do we want to in the United States.
I just feel like if Americans did it, it would seem a little bit off. Because I feel like in K-dramas, and you can probably speak more to it than I would, but there's a subtlety in actions, and there's everything is in the look, and the gesture, or like how you look at someone, or how you sort of react to someone, and it's very subtle, and it's told through like music and camera angles, and it's like it's the kind of thing that I think a lot of people like anime for. It's like very subtle, like very like. You know, it's like not—it's not in your face, basically. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, like you mentioned, in a lot of American shows, it's action and sex, and there's not much room for
boom,
the nuance.
Pow. I'm just gonna like slap you right now. Well, it's funny because I was watching. Did you watch the show The Bear? American show, The Bear.
No, but I do want to watch that. I don't know.
That show is so stressful, but it's so good. But I have to say, there were moments where it reminded me of a K-drama because there was so much yelling. There's like a really heated K-drama. You know, there could be so much yelling at everybody. And there was so much yelling in this kitchen. I was like, oh my God, this is very K-drama-esque in a different way. Maybe that's why I liked it. I don't know.
So So tell me, like, you know, off the top of your head, like, what do you think your favorite, like, if I was completely new to K-drama, I don't know what to watch. I don't know what this is all about. What's your, like, recommendation of what to watch?
Okay, well, it depends what Maybe. Do you gravitate to. Because if you like romantic dramas, then absolutely mm-hmm. one of the first shows you should watch is not that old. It was just out pre-pandemic, like right before the pandemic, Crash Landing Into You. That is...
Yes!
Oh, you've already seen it. Oh, okay. You agree, right? Okay, no, okay.
I'm just, that's very good. I agree with that.
I feel like it's a really good representation. First of all, who's going to be able to talk about North Korea other than South Korea, right? So, yeah, so forget about the political stuff, but just from a character level, the romance, and then all of the characters and the friendships and the bonds, like that's the kind of magic that is very hard to do in the U.S. Maybe in a film, I think you could. It's escaping me to give you an example of a film, but in a TV reoccurring series, it's very difficult to find a show that
that's a good suggestion.
Crash Landing Into You. I don't know. I mean, if you like fantasy, it just depends on what you might like. You know, I have my list here now that you're asking me of like all the dramas I have watched. Oh my God. I have watched 154 K-dramas right now.
I guess.
And I only started some of that's reality shows too.
The reason why I asked is because like you mentioned, Squid Game is like the entry point for a lot of people, the Squid Game. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like even though, I mean, it's a decent series, it's pretty good. I just was just like, really, this is the one?
Okay, see, you and me alike. You know, there's nothing wrong with Squid Game. I'm glad it's so successful. I'm glad for the actors and the filmmakers and all of that. But I'm just like, this is the one. But see, it makes sense though. Doesn't it make sense why?
It's the violence globally? And the gamification part of it. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I there's also C dramas. I don't know how much, do you watch much C dramas at all or did you, Nicole? Because I love Wuxia. C dramas are like one of my favorite. Wuxia, I love it. I love sword fighting. To me, there's not a lot of in K-dramas that I can point to in that world, but in C drama is like, that's if you want martial arts. I mean, it is fun.
Back in the day, I think it was, I can't remember exactly when it came out, but there were a few back in the day that I used to watch. I think it was like Andy Lau was like part of it, and all those like Hong Kong actors. Meg Cheung was, anyway. But yeah, I'm a little bit aware, but honestly, I want to say those kinds of like Chinese, Hong Kong kind of dramas, it's hard to find in the U.S. It's super hard to find. You have to like go down the rabbit hole of streaming services.
Yeah.
Or something to like
Vicky.com. Vicky.com. Get your sponsorship, Nicole, on this show. Vicky.com. That's where I ended up watching a lot of the C dramas that were Wuxia. I mean, I also like modern C dramas as well, but man, Chinese dramas are like 50 episodes for one season.
Oh, yeah.
They're long. They're very and long. Like, you know, they're really good if they're really good, but the thing that I try to tell myself, it's the journey. It's not always how it ends, but sometimes when it's a 54 episode series and you get to episode 54 and that is the episode that falls flat. Everything else was amazing. I'm like, no, I spent this whole journey and you did this to the end. No.
Yeah. It's hard to watch like, really long TV shows like that. It's been like by the 40th episode, things fall apart. They're like, wait, I just watched 40 episodes of
this. I mean, we know that in the U.S., right? Because we have multiple seasons and like Dexter. Mm. Anyway. one other K-drama I would recommend for the feels, right? I love watching K-dramas for the feels is Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha that came out last year. It's on Netflix. Okay. And it is the story of a dentist who moves to a small town to start up her own practice because she just got tired of Seoul and got pushed out. And she, you know, decided she was going to do her own thing and is a little bit protective contentious and, you know, learns about life through living in this small town. And you meet this cast of characters that live in this small town and, you know, how they're all building bonds. And in the middle of it, she meets Chief Hong, who is the everyday guy in the town. And all of them have stories that are very connected and poignant. And anyway, the dentist and Chief Hong, Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha, I just totally recommend. If you're into something, if you want the feels, which is mostly, again, maybe that's how I should have described K-dramas from the beginning, the feels. That you really get the feels when you watch K-dramas. I mean, there are some really like soap opera, which they call Makjong, and those are like, those are like Days of Our Lives on adrenaline, like times 10, right? Like you think our soap operas or even Grey's Anatomy, you think our soap operas are salacious and crazy? Oh no. Oh no. I mean, they're telenovelas, right? Telenovelas could be like, woo, you survived the dead. Well, this is not even just surviving the dead.
Yeah.
Surviving 10 times.
It's kind of a tangent, but it's somewhat related. And this might be a topic for another time for some other episode, but this reminds me a lot of how you know, like this kind of content is it's very approachable. It's like super, I want to say like not mainstream, but like it's close enough to mainstream, I guess. It's on Netflix, for example, right? So it's very like acceptable, and it kind of reminds me of like, you know, like for a while I feel like a lot of Asian culture is like seen as like really weird. Mm-hmm. Like things like mukbang, for example.
Oh yeah. Like, I remember that first came out, everybody was like, huh? And now
so weird.
Oh my god. Now you can't get enough. There's so many people just eating.
Just eating.
And it's fine. Yeah. You know?
But yeah, things that used to be foreign and kind of brushed away have sort of seeped their way into like, no, this is part of us. And I think the takeaway I feel is that it's because, well, hopefully anyway, is that Asians are accepted as, they're not just like people from over there. It's people who are in your lives, who are mm-hmm. next to you, who are, mm-hmm. can be your friends and coworkers and your family members even. And I feel like, you know, there should be hopefully all of this like K-dramas and Asian American representation in media in general, like it's very recent. I want to say it's very recent.
Yeah.
And I still don't think it's really to the level that I want it to be. You know, it's still not quite there yet, you know?
I agree. Yeah, like
better.
Like when Tom and I go to a K-pop concert, like, you guys are going to yes.
Yeah.
Again and again, right. And a different band. It's not BTS, guys. We watch other bands. And we will also see non-K-pop bands, but we also know other bands outside of BTS, even though they're my favorite. I go see other bands. And yes, I do things. Right. Oh my gosh, the things that I've learned. It's just fun. And I think there are different communities that, you know, are rising in terms of like, whether it be foods or even just different kinds of fashions and, you know.
Absolutely. I know for me and I'm sure for you as well, like my entry point to all of this Asian culture, Korean stuff, it's not just food, of course. I mean, food is always like part of Asian culture. But for me, it was actually like beauty products.
Yes, me too.
It was very interesting for me because like, you know, being in America, like what I know as beauty products is like Sephora and, you know, whatever, like those kinds of products, which is fine. Nothing wrong with them. It's just that when I discovered K-beauty and through the internet, through like mm-hmm. SoCoGlam.com or whatever.com, yep. I was like, oh, this is like for my skin.
Yeah.
For my skin.
Didn't you feel that? It was for us.
Yes. This is for my particular skin.
Revlon was for white people. Right. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, now I think it's changing, you know, but for the longest time I was like, well, this foundation is just way, it's not for me. It wasn't dark enough, you know, ever. I mean, there is, you know, some color, you know, that's very light a lot of times in K-beauty as well, but they're changing too. But I mean, in terms of like the steps and the care, you know, like this 10-step method, the toner, the essence, the serum, I was like, oh my God, what is all of this? And the sheet masks are now like, everyone's using sheet masks.
Everyone's using those things. all the celebrities are using sheet masks, so whatever.
And they're making their own now. I'm like, okay, you know what my favorite were? The cushions, the foundation cushions.
Yeah.
And like now, you know, so many other, Estee Lauder or whoever, are making their own cushions, you know. I'm like, oh, okay, well, all right, but okay.
Again, like a lot of this from K-beauty to K-dramas to the Asian American representation, like all of this, I feel like it's spread through like social media and like the internet and things showing up on TV. Like, you know, like again, like a lot of these I would never have heard of if it wasn't for like some, you know, viral video I've seen somewhere.
Well, but like, don't you watch videos now too of other Asians talking about food or talking about movies, and you're like, yeah, like you automatically like, oh wow, just 5 years ago didn't have that perspective out there widely, and now we do with the because of like TikTok or whatever it may be, whatever you're using, you know, to find, you know, even in YouTube. I just feel like I'm hearing more conversations from people that have the same perspective as I do, you know, maybe slightly different. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not Asian American. Maybe they're, you know, Asian and immigrant or whatever, but it's still closer than what it was before. Right?
I also feel, I also feel like in the, if I was like in my 20s or in my teens and I'm watching all of this content, I would feel, right, as a 40-year-old, I feel seen for, like, the first time in forever, right? But I feel like, you know, if you're younger, you're growing up with this. Like, you will feel like you belong already.
You belong already, yeah.
You know, there's
at least I hope so. Like, I hope so.
Anyway, right?
Yeah. I mean.
But I hope so, like, you will feel like you're already part of this conversation, that you won't feel like, oh, I have to be a doctor, I have to be a lawyer or whatever. You can be whoever you want. In anything you want, and hopefully that's the message, you know.
Yeah, listen, young people listening to this, let us know if us olds are making any sense, or are we just, no, I don't know, are you not feeling seen? Because we feel like we would be more seen, but we also have different perspective of not ever being seen, right?
Right.
So it's a little different. It's a little crazy.
All right. Yeah, so like I guess we would just finish the outro, or like in the sense of like what do you hope going forward in Asian representation in media? Do you want different kinds of it? Do you want different K-dramas to be on Netflix, or do you want to see a K-drama on your TV, on NBC? Or is that too much, or is that too outside of purview?
What do I want in the future? I mean, I think I just want more, you know, I'm a little greedy about it right now. I want more. That's all I'm watching, really. I mean, actually, I did get a little burnt out on K-dramas recently because I was just like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on. Plus, I've been crazy about K-pop lately, which has taken up my life. So different in it, you know, something else has moved in. But I just think we need more. The more, the better. I don't really know what industry doesn't need more Asian representation. And maybe that's too general of an answer because I can't think of my feet right now. I would welcome more, you know, and I think from other cultures, you know, whether my own culture, Filipino culture. I mean, we're finally, I see on your rundown here, we could have talked about Jokoi
and Easter Sunday
coming out, which is, I love all the comments were like, oh, of course, Easter Sunday is not coming out near Easter. It's way late. Filipino time. I mean, you know, more representation from more Asian cultures. You know, I don't remember what you were saying earlier, but it reminded me of, I think just talking about generations. And I don't know, for some reason, Moana came into my head. And when Moana debuted, I like cried in that movie for a, you know, animation, because there was a brown girl represent, like that was like on the heels of like all these amazing new properties that are, you know, that show Asian representation now.
Yeah.
But that was even early, and that wasn't long ago. That wasn't long ago, but it felt like it was one of the first. And I'm like, what? Why am I crying to see this, you know,
honestly,
brown representation?
I completely agree with you. I mean, you know, in retrospect, I suppose Crazy Rich Asians or Shang-Chi, they're, I guess, from a maybe non-Asian perspective, they're like, you know, decent movies. But when I watched Crazy Rich Asians, I cried because I, you know, it was something so relatable to me. Mm-hmm. When I watched Shang-Chi, I cried because it was just like generational, you know, father-son relationship. Mm-hmm. I was like, I started feeling feelings, you know?
Yeah.
And I just feel like a lot of the Pixar, Turning Red, I cried in that one.
Oh, goodness. I got to play that song right now. Okay.
I cried in Turning Red because it was just like that mother-daughter relationship. Like, I completely felt that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these movies with Asian representation, like, I really feel, and it really touched me. And I wouldn't be seeing them until, like, literally, I say, like, the past, like, 3-4 years or something.
I know. I am jealous of 20-year-olds. I want to live in a world where most of my life I had this kind of, you know, representation. And this is why I think, you know, this is why I say more. Probably because, I don't know, maybe you should have a guest who is in that age bracket, but do they want more?
Yeah.
Maybe they want more, you know, I mean, we haven't even talked about like political issues in the world and Asians and representation and, you know, hate crimes and things like that are going on that are very prevalent and that are scary for the youth, you know?
Yeah.
And so because of things that are out there like that, that's why I say more, like we need more. People need to be
more of it.
And I'm not saying even just us being educated about other Asian cultures that aren't our own, but obviously other people need to be educated even more. And still, I mean, sometimes it takes forever to get it in anyone's thick skull, what we're trying to say, you know?
Yeah. And so, I think that's absolutely it. More, just so that it's normalized. So that it's not weird. It's not like some, you know, like unusual thing is that it's just normal.
Yeah.
It's just a completely normal thing.
Yeah. I was on, I'm always on TikTok, but I think I was, maybe it was TikTok or maybe it was YouTube, but someone was like calling out, you know, white guy, you know, freaking out about Asian foods in, you know, whatever country he was in. And I was like, yeah, because that kind of shtick is like, bye, delete, move on.
So I watched a couple of, I think I watched the same TikTok video that you did.
Yeah.
But okay. I watched like responses to it and they're hilarious. Like, there's this one TikTok video of an Asian person or a Latino person. She's like, he's holding up a hot dog. Oh, look at this like weird tortilla I found. It's like fluffy tortilla. You know?
Yeah.
Pretend, you know what I mean?
It's so like, it's, really, it's guys? Like, that shtick, like, for fish out of water kind of thing? I don't know. Like, move on. Like, just, there could be some shock because, yes, there are people who have not been exposed to certain foods or certain cultures, and you're like, whoa, what's that? But the way it was so comically done, it was like, yeah, that comic stuff is like, bye, you know, that's not funny anymore. That's old.
Okay,
get with the times.
We could literally talk about this forever.
I know.
But let's wrap things up. Eileen, it was so good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too. Thanks for having me on. I mean, and whenever you want to talk about any of this stuff, I'm sure we could come up with so many more examples.
So many more.
Like, we were just kind of like skirting the surface and I couldn't even in my brain. I was like, what was the name of that thing that I liked before? That thing. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
You guys know.
All right. Thank you so much, Eileen, for talking to me. And hopefully this continues and we can talk more about all kinds of things.
Thanks, Nicole. Loved
Thank
it.
You.
And that was the first and possibly only episode of Boba Tech. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to let me know what you think of it, my Twitter handle is Nicole, just @Nicole. That's me. Just let me know what you think of it. If you want to hear more, you know, any comments, you know, just be as nice as you can. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.